Jesus is going from Judea to Galilee, the two centers of Jewish population at that time. But in between Judea and Galilee is a land known as Samaria. And we might think, well, okay, that's like going from, you know, Illinois to Minnesota. You're likely going to pass through Wisconsin. What's the big deal? Well, if you pass from Illinois through Minnesota, if you pass from Illinois to Minnesota through Wisconsin, and you happen to be wearing a Chicago Bears jersey, it's not such a good idea. I mean, there are places where that might provoke a very hostile response. And in fact, the Samaritans and the Jews did not get along at all. And the reason goes back hundreds of years. So you might remember that Jacob had 12 sons, and those 12 sons became known as the 12 tribes. You know, all their descendants became the 12 tribes of Israel. And the tribes were not united until David was the king. And the unified kingdom didn't last very long. It began to break apart already while Solomon was the king, and then it was fully blown apart after Solomon died. So it didn't last very long. And so you had the northern kingdom, which was 9.5 tribes. And you had the southern kingdom, which was two and a half tribes. And the northern kingdom was overrun by and defeated by the Assyrian Empire in 722 B.C. And this is important because when the Assyrians took over territory, when they conquered people, they would shuffle the deck. So they would take, you know, a number of the conquered peoples at once and kind of mix up the population and then relocate them. And the reason was they didn't want any conquered territory to have, you know, critical mass that could rise up in rebellion. So they shuffled the deck. And in doing that, you ended up with, when people moved, they brought with them their customs, their language, and also their religious observances, up to and including, you know, their deities. And so it was, you know, the biblical version of this is that the Samaritans were not faithful followers of God. The Samaritan version of it is that they represent the kind of like the faithful remnant. And in fact, they got it right. So they didn't agree on what was scriptural. And the big point of difference was, where is the center of worship? And we're going to touch more on that in the second part of the reading. But is it Jerusalem, or is it, you know, Mount Gerizim in the northern part, which is where this scene takes place today? So, as you can see, Jesus in his encounter with this woman, he is crossing ethnic boundaries in a very, very profound way. And he does that because Jesus is for everyone. His own include everyone. Jesus is also having an extended one-on-one with a woman, which was uncharacteristic for that time as well. And you're going to hear more about that when the disciples come back into the scene. So Jesus crosses gender distinctions, gender divisions as well. Again, because Jesus is for everyone. So clearly there's an exchange that's going to take place here. And it begins when Jesus invites or asks the woman to give him a drink because he's thirsty. And he responds then by offering her a water that she didn't really understand what he was talking about. He referred to it as living water, something that would gush up into eternal life. So we begin to understand what Jesus means by living water. Jesus' gift of living water is the gift of himself, his presence, an encounter, a relationship. And we see this developing in his exchange with the woman. And have you ever been in a place where you're meeting someone for the first time and they ask you a question and it's a fairly benign question, just like one of those social graces, But because of your life experience, you can't give it just a simple answer. I mean, there's more behind the answer. And so you have to decide, am I going to stay superficial or am I going to go deep here? And the woman decides to go deep. Now, Jesus says something very innocuous. He says, go call your husband and let's talk about this. You know, culturally that would have been expected. And she, rather than saying something superficial like, my husband's not home, which would have been true, she said, I have no husband, revealing something about herself. But you remember from a few weeks ago, Jesus knows everything about everybody. And so he says, well, you've spoken truthfully. You don't have a husband. In fact, you've had five. And the man you're with now is not your husband. Now, scholars for a long, long time heard this and read some kind of moral failure into this woman's life story. But if you think about how Jesus engages her, there's no indication of that at all. In biblical times, how was it that a woman could lose a husband? There were two ways. He could die, or he could divorce her. Now, in biblical times, she didn't have the ability to divorce him. He could divorce her. And for any reason whatsoever, tired of lamb night after night after night. Yeah. In all likelihood, or probably the most likely reason that she would have been divorced multiple times, if these were divorces, was that she didn't have children. And that was always seen as the fault of the woman. So I mean, as squirrely as it can be sometimes now, you know, for women in our time and place, it is better. More places than not. So in all likelihood, she's suffered some combination of deceased husbands and divorcing husbands and is now living with another guy. And we think, well, Pastor, you know, that can't have been okay back then. Actually, under certain circumstances, it was. So if the last husband had died without providing her, or had died without her having provided him an heir, then within the law, she was to live with that former husband's brother. And he would provide an heir to his brother for inheritance purposes. And so in all likelihood, that's what was going on here. So we have to decide, how do we hear this? Do we hear this encounter as with someone who's suffered moral failure, or do we hear this as an encounter with someone who's had a hard life? And I think by the way Jesus responds to her, it's the latter. So since their conversation was not superficial, but deep, she goes to the place that is the most divisive between Samaritans and Jews. And she's talking about where it is that God is to be worshipped. Well, we might say, you know, do you worship at Atonement or do you worship at the Village Church? Or do you worship at St. Anne's or do you worship at St. Michael's? I mean, we think, you know, God is at the Village Church, God's at St. Anne's, God's at St. Michael's, God's even at Atonement, right? But back then, God was in, it was an either-or proposition. You know, where is God present? And the woman says, we say it's here on this mountain, but you say it's in Jerusalem at the temple. Which is it? And Jesus says, well, you know, there's a time coming when you're not going to worship either here or there. You're going to worship in spirit and in truth. Worship is going to be different. And then the woman says, well, I know that eventually the Messiah is going to explain all things to us. You know, do you know anything about that? And Jesus does better than say, yes, I know. He says, I am. He echoes God's own self-revelation from the Old Testament. Jesus says, I am. The woman had come to the well for water. And after her encounter with Jesus and her receiving of living water, she left what she had come for behind. She left her jar. And she went back to her city to talk about what had happened. She received more than she had come for. How is it for you when you have some kind of a really positive experience? Do you keep it to yourself or do you want to share it? When you get to one of the new restaurants and you have a great meal, do you tell your friends? Or are you worried that, well, if it becomes popular, I'm not going to be able to get in there anymore? You know, when you get your car fixed and they do a nice job at a fair price, do you tell your friends or are you worried about, man, I'm not going to be able to get on the schedule, it's going to start costing me more? Do you tell your friends? Okay, I think in this crowd we're pretty generous with the sharing of restaurant and mechanic recommendations. Here's the tough one. When you get a really good babysitter. Yeah, I thought so. So the woman goes back to her city to share her experience. And those who hear then come to Jesus and they have their own experience. So they believe enough to come and hear what he has to say, but their own belief comes from having drank of the living water themselves. All right? If you're thirsty, someone else is not going to relieve your thirst by drinking for you. Someone else might be able to say, here's where the water is. But you have to drink the water for yourself if you're going to have your thirst relieved. So we're in an appeal now for the next few weeks, beginning last Sunday, called Yes And. And it's a capital appeal. And we're asking you to listen to the stories of those around you and to come to the source of the living water in those stories and write your own. So, you know, we're all drinking from wells that we didn't dig. Right? There are no charter members here today, right? And just like the well that Jesus and the woman met at was a well that they didn't dig. It had been there for at least 1,000 years. Now, Atonement's only been here for about, 57 years. But wouldn't it be something if 943 years from now, someone's standing in this place and reflecting back on the wells that were dug long, long before and the water that it had sustained through all those years? And so that's what we're asking you to do. I hope you're getting the daily devotions. They're a reflection of our people, of how God had said yes to them or how they've said yes to God and gotten more than they expected in response. And then there are video clips. We've sent, I think, just one so far. You're going to see another one toward the end of the worship service today. But they're reflections on this, and they're inviting you to come to the water yourself. And then beyond that, we're doing this so that all of us might provide living water in perpetuity in this place and in the world beyond. So, our intentions are to strengthen our position here, that we might be a place of living water for generations to come. And that also Atonement is at its best when we live beyond ourselves and extend ourselves to ministries regionally and in the world. And likewise, we are providing living water well beyond Atonement through Yes And. So as you participate in this over the next few weeks, I invite you to reflect on your own story, what God has done in you and what God yet will do in you. Wherever we meet Jesus, the living water is there. Wherever. Where he is present. Where he engages us. Where he forgives. Where he builds community. Where he sustains. And so I invite you into this now. For yourself. For all of us. For the community. For the world. For now. And forever. Amen.